I've got an interesting statistic to share with you, but before I do, a quick heads up. We're about to have a conversation that acknowledges the existence of sex, specifically sex and teenagers. If you've got kids around or it's not something you want to listen to, you can tune back in about 10 minutes. So, according to a recent survey of young Australians, a third of Year 10 high school students reported having had sexual intercourse, and some 70% have experienced some form of sexual activity. The fact is, increasingly, young people are having sex. But how are writers of young adult fiction navigating this often tricky literary territory? In Newcastle tomorrow, the National Young Writers Festival kicks off. It's a four-day festival, and among the workshops and performances will be discussions on this very subject. Joining me now on RN Afternoons is Erin Farrow, a PhD student who also teaches at Victoria University. Hi, Erin.
Hi.
And Emma Marie Jones, sex editor at Spook Magazine. Hi.
Hello.
Erin, you've been studying how sex is represented in young adult fiction written in the last 30 years. Can you tell me about your studies?
I look at how the narrative preoccupations in young adult literature have changed over that time. We found that the depictions have become more honest, but also more subtle across the time period.
Can we jump straight into a grab? This is starting in 1951, so a bit further back than your research goes. This is from The Catcher in the Rye. It's often cited as one of the most seminal young adult novels. Let's play a quick extract. This is Holden Caulfield talking about his growing interest and desire for girls.
I think if you don't really like a girl, you shouldn't horse around with her at all. And if you do like her, then you're supposed to like her face. And if you like her face, you ought to be careful about doing crummy stuff to it, like squirting water all over it. It's really too bad that so much crummy stuff is a lot of fun sometimes.
There's a fair bit to unpack in that quote, and I think it's a good place to start. He's reacting to seeing a couple squirting water at each other's faces. I mean, it's of an era. It's of the 50s. Have we moved on since then? Social mores have changed. How has young adult literature changed?
Well, I think the difference is the idea, how society viewed sex in the 50s versus now, and also the availability that teens today have to access information on sex. So back then, sex was more of a taboo subject. Adults talked about it away from the ears of children. Children didn't really have free access to information about it, as opposed to the access that they have today, internet, literature, TV.
Spook Magazine is, of course, one of those places where young teenagers can go to access information. Mm-hmm. Emma, what are your memories of reading about sex and sexuality in literature when you were growing up? Do any books jump to mind?
Oh, one of the first things that I would remember reading about sex would have to be John Marsden, which I know you mentioned in your article, Erin, and the Tomorrow When the War Began series. And also another Australian author that you mentioned in your article is Marlena Marqueta.
Looking for Ala Brandy.
I mean, Ala Brandy is iconic.
All three of us are of an age where that book was doing the rounds, and that made a huge impression on me as well. Interestingly, I remember Josie, the character from Looking for Ala Brandy, decided not to have sex. We've also got an excerpt from a more recent novel from Marlena Marqueta, On the Jellicoe Road, which was written in 2006. Erin, can you set this excerpt up?
Yeah, it's between the protagonist and her love interest in the novel. It's a very honest but complex book, and I think this plays into the character's dealing with a lot of things. She has been abandoned by her mum. She's been dropped at a boarding school. She's trying to find herself, and in a sense, she's also finding her own sexuality. And I think it's a great excerpt because it shows how big a deal it is, and her internal struggles, as well as how, you know, bumbling that first sexual experience can be. So it's a great example, I think, of what's in young adult texts today.
Everything hurts, every single thing, including the weight of him. And I'm crying because it hurts. And he's telling me he's sorry over and over again. And I figure that somewhere down the track, we'll work out the right way of doing this, but I don't want to let go. Because tonight, I'm not looking for anything but being part of him. Because being part of him isn't just anything. It's kind of everything.
So there's a lot of emotion and vulnerability exposed in that passage, and it's a great example, Erin, of how there's a lot more subtlety and honesty being conveyed in young adult fiction. Would you say that young adult fiction is becoming more emotionally complex?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things I look at is the shifting self-awareness of the characters and how they're much more aware that their identity is going to continually change. Earlier text, by the end of the novel, it was almost said that, you know, this is who I am, this is who I'm going to be. Now, it's more recognisable that they know that that's who they are at that stage, but their personality is going to change continuously throughout their lives, and that there's no need to have that clear sense of who you are and what you're going to do that's open to change.
And it seems like authenticity is a big part. Emma, Spook Magazine's target audience is 18 to 35, but you also attract readers, I'd say, from a younger age as well. What do you consider when it comes to making editorial decisions on material that deals with sex and sexuality? Is that authenticity a big part of what you're aiming for?
Yeah, definitely. I think authenticity and that kind of honesty is something that encourages really open discussions about sexual experience and lived experience.
I notice in Spook Magazine that you're covering a lot of sex-positive areas and considering sexual diversity as well. I think in a lot of young adult fiction, certainly what I read as a teenager, I was reading what was targeted at me as a young teenage girl. How much are you aware of targeting diverse audiences and diverse sexuality?
Very.
Yeah, no, I think it's really important to me to be really inclusive and to be aware that our audience is diverse and that all audiences are diverse and that young audiences are increasingly aware of their own diversity and that, you know, continually flexible, that an identity at the end of a young adult novel, which is often going to be the end of high school, that's not a point where an identity becomes fixed.
On RN Afternoons, you're with Alice Keith, and I'm speaking with Erin Farrow, a PhD student who teaches at Victoria University, and Emma Marie Jones, sex editor at Spook Magazine. And we're talking about how sex and sexuality is depicted in young adult literature. Emma, you're a writer as well as an editor.
Yes.
Have you had a go at tackling the theme of sex and sexuality in your writing?
Yes, I have.
What was the approach that you took?
Pretty honest. Often pretty blunt, which is pretty much the opposite of what Erin is saying is happening in young adult fiction. And I guess that's because I'm writing about it from an older adult perspective, often in terms of what's going on in my own life or in the lives of people in my sort of age group, which is late 20s. So I think a more blunt and far less subtle and more humorous and tongue-in-cheek approach is more appropriate for a late 20s demographic, not so much maybe for a more early teenage sexual awakening sort of demographic.
How aware do young adult fiction writers need to be of that specific age group that they're targeting and what might be appropriate for those different age groups?
Yeah, they need to have a huge sense of awareness, mostly because I find that if they're, and we spoke about this earlier, if they're not true to the character and the character's age and how that character would speak to their friends, the readers are really astute. They're not going to waste their time if they don't feel like the character is believable or, you know, would say the things that they're saying. So I think definitely authors need to be aware of, I guess, the level of experiences that the character and their friends would have, also the way that they would speak about sex. Otherwise, the readers, they won't finish the book.
Well, a great example of an authentic description of sex for the first time comes from John Green's book, The Fault in Our Stars, which was written in 2012. And obviously, audiences really responded to that. It was a bestseller and also it was made into a movie recently. Erin, can you set up this passage for us?
Yeah, so the two characters in this, they're both being given cancer diagnoses. They're dealing with a lot, obviously, impending death, but they're still going through the same young adult experiences that the readers are. So it's first love and they're obviously trying to fit in experiences that they know they don't have the rest of their lives to experience. And this is particularly unique in terms of one of the characters, the male character, Augustus. He is an amputee. He is a prosthetic leg. And I think that just adds an even more honest bent to this, I guess, because as well as it being first love and then both being nervous and wondering what the other one's thinking, there's this whole added element, but it brings in some humour and it makes it a bit lighter than some of the other depictions are.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, it's, I think this is very direct. There's certainly no string quartets and sunsets in this scene. Let's have a listen.
The whole affair was the precise opposite of what I figured it would be. Slow and patient and quiet, and neither particularly painful nor particularly ecstatic. There were a lot of condom-y problems that I did not get a particularly good look at. No headboards were broken, no screaming. Honestly, it was probably the longest time we'd ever spent together without talking.
So it's very un-Hollywood and really quite a mundane, realistic depiction of a lot of people's first experiences of having sex. Do you think that helps young people break down taboos around this subject?
Oh, definitely. I think if, you know, a lowering of expectations in this era definitely isn't a bad thing. And I think if it lessens the pressure that the teenagers are putting on themselves going into this, it's a great thing.
I think also the fact that it mentions condoms is hugely important just in terms of mentioning sexual health and reminding teenagers that not only is that, you know, I mean, if the characters in their favourite book are doing it.
Absolutely.
That's pretty important.
And also normalising it with, I mean, porn being so accessible, do you think that makes young adult fiction more important than ever in terms of providing an alternative perspective?
I think porn is definitely standing in as an alternative to sexual education in terms of technique for a lot of young internet users, and there are a lot of statistics to support that. I know that initiatives such as MakeLoveNotPorn.com exist to try and take away from that.
Yeah, and is there any young adult fiction that addresses that and writes about porn that you've come across?
Not that I've come across, no. I think there's some in the new adult genre, which goes a little bit above young adult, but again, it's an older audience. It's looking more that sort of 18 to 25 as opposed to 18 and below, but nothing in young adult.
I think what's interesting in that respect is maybe fan fiction, and I think that's where the internet and that sort of more participatory element of the internet comes into it, where that sort of young adult audience can write its own fiction.
And we were speaking earlier about sexual diversity. How about young adult fiction that's either aimed or represents LGBT communities? Are there stories about young people coming out? Are there gay protagonists in young adult fiction? And how accessible is that literature?
It's definitely becoming more easily accessible, which is great. Previously, we had very limited sort of diversity with protagonists, but even John Green, the author of The Fault in Our Stars, he has a text called Will Grayson, Will Grayson, which has a gay protagonist. There's also, you know, there's others out there, and it's good that they're more readily available, and hopefully with newer ones coming out, they then, you know, fuel furthermore to come.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Erin Farrow, PhD student who also teaches at Victoria University. Thanks for chatting here on RN Afternoons.
Thanks very much.
And Emma Marie Jones, sex editor at Spook Magazine, who's also speaking at the National Young Writers Festival, which kicks off tomorrow in Newcastle. Emma, which events will you be speaking at?
I'll be speaking at the Writing Sex event and at Editing Ignorance. And there are some also companion events, which are Nailing Sex Scenes and the late night reading Sex and Cyborgs. And you can check out the youngwritersfestival.org, where the program is, for all the details of when those events are taking place.
And we'll put a link to that at the RN Afternoons homepage. There are all sorts of events running across the 4 days. It's not all sex and cyborgs. I'll also put a link to Erin's article online. Alice Keith with you here on RN Afternoons. Time now for some music from Album of the Week. This is Robert Forster with A Poet Walks.
I walked the streets and hugged the walls. I see a canal and think waterfalls. And there are numbers, long distance numbers I could call. And there are faces, long distance faces I can't recall. around here at all. I see the shops and I walk on by. My soup stained vest, my critical eye. Given to choices, two clear choices, I take both. And there are secrets that I could tell, but I won't. No, I won't. I got a notebook and I got a light. My head is loose, my jacket's tight. A poet walks and the path is bright. And there are visions like a spell I can't break. A poet walks through the streets, past canals and retreats, and the fog. A poet walks, shits and talks. Past all the lives I've ever known.